Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. I'm your host for today's show, Stephanie Whitehead. If this is your first time tuning in, do me a favor and like and share this episode. We want all of your friends in the laboratory community to come over and listen. Don't be stingy. Let this episode be heard across the masses so other people can benefit. For those of you tuning in for the first time, I'm your podcasting executive leader and co-host for this show. If you haven't heard of our show before, the eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-host Taiwana Wilson and Loma Small bring you topics related to the laboratory and leadership to help you excel inside and outside the laboratory. You can listen to us on all podcast platforms as well as VineStream. We are on LabVine now, so go over to LabVine, get your free membership, and listen to all of our previous episodes. And I'm really excited for today's show because I've got a new friend that I recently met joining me today. So thank you for joining me today, Ms. Shonda Jones.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. This podcast is being recorded a couple of weeks off of the heels of the 2022 ASCP annual conference, which was held in Chicago at the Hyatt Hotel. And while I was there, I was in a very invigorating and interesting session. And during the Q&A portion, a very dynamic and passionate laboratory scientist stood up to the mic and asked so many questions and talked about her journey as a MLS working in an ambulatory setting, and that was Shonda. And I tell you guys, after that, I walked straight up to her and I said, I have got to know this person.
Yeah, that made me feel good.
I have got to know who she is. We have got to connect. And so your passion for laboratory science and your passion for where you work and what you do really just radiated off of you, even in our first meeting. So I had to have her come on the show, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear about her lab journey and hear about what she's doing now and hopefully what's next for her in her career. So Shonda, why don't you take a couple of moments and just tell the listeners a little bit about your laboratory journey and what you're doing today and where you got to where you are.
All right. So my laboratory journey is all over the place and a little bit long. So I'm going to try and like sum this up. But essentially, I started out at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, thought I was going to be this cardiovascular surgeon. Mind you, I wanted to be a cardiovascular surgeon since I was like in third grade. So I had it set. I was going to be a pediatric cardiovascular surgeon. Well, it turns out I don't math so well. And Chapel Hill taught me that. They taught me that lesson. So I said, okay, maybe this is it for me, but what else can I do? And I took a microbiology class, loved the lab. The laboratory portion of it was my absolute favorite. Decided at that point that I was going to be a microbiologist. Well, how do you become a microbiologist? I didn't know. But Chapel Hill had just started their medical laboratory sciences program. I think it was in its second year when I kind of came across it. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to apply for that program. I'm going to get in and then I'll be a medical laboratory scientist, whatever that is. So did that, applied for the program. And I got the first interview, did well in that. Got invited to the second interview, did well in that. And so basically it was just going to be contingent upon my grades at the end of the semester. And I had pretty decent grades, so I wasn't worried, but end up having a bout of depression in the middle of school, middle of this semester. And I was taking genetics and molecular biology along with developmental biology. So it's like that two-part class, you know, where the first part's taught by one professor, second part's totally different professor, totally different subject. They average it together. Well, I'm struggling in this depression, make it through the first half, good, but developmental biology, oh my goodness, like wore me out. So didn't do so well at the end, but averaging those grades together ended up with a C, which is tragic at Chapel Hill. Most competitive school I've ever been to, worst experience ever. But that's another story. But anyhow, I was nervous. So I was like, this, my life depends on this one C. Went home for fall break, received my letter in the mail, noticed it was a letter and not a packet, and knew immediately it was a rejection letter. So opened it up, rejection. I'm like, well, now what am I going to be? What am I going to do? Like, I had decided, I knew this is what I was going to do. I've always been a person who decided the course of my life, and that's what happened. Like, I went in that direction, whatever it was that I decided I was going to do. And now here I am being hit with a failure. What do I do? So I cried and basically laid in my dark room for all of fall break, came back to school and was just lost. Really, was just lost. Ended up picking biology, BA, because I didn't want to BS because I knew I wasn't going to medical school. So why go through that? Did the BA, was like, maybe I can teach. I like to teach. Okay. So finished the program, kind of had some more doubts, bouts of depression, whatever, kind of dropped out of school, came back, dropped out, came back, finally graduated a year after my peers, and found, you know, was like, okay, I know I want to do lab. So how can I do that? I found a program at the University of South Carolina, which was a post-baccalaureate research education program. And it was about, you know, working in the laboratory from an academic standpoint. So I was like, that sounds interesting, doing research at, you know, in academia, I'll do that. So got into that program. If you work that program for like a year, you do well in your grades, you do well with everything else, they pretty much guarantee you acceptance into a PhD program. So got accepted into a PhD program. Everything was great. Like, I was rocking and rolling. Grades were good. I ended up presenting at a NIH conference. It was on microbiology. It was a biodefense conference through actually the ASM. ASM sponsored that. So I actually spoke. I was a presenter, got a 15-minute presentation as a first-year grad student, which is major. Did that and then was derailed again. Me and my advisor, he was, I think, upset that I got that because normally he would get a poster invite to do a poster. And he thought that maybe they made a mistake and thought I was a doctor. It brought up all this negative energy that I never would have even thought about.
Wow.
And yeah, me and him just hit a wall at that point. Our relationship just completely fractured. So ended up leaving him after another year. And at that point, I was pretty much ABD. And I'm like, now what? I had to find another program. What do I do? So that's what I did. I found another program, found another advisor, transferred programs, went to environmental health sciences. At that point, I was in the biomedical sciences program. Moved into environmental health sciences, doing environmental microbiology under a wonderful advisor. But the problem was I had to start over. All new prereqs, stuff I hadn't taken, courses, like disaster. But did that and then just kind of floundered. You know, like just hit another negative space where I was like, what is going on in my life? What am I doing with my life? Like, everything has just been so derailed. I had to start over, blah. Got pregnant a few years later and was like, hey, now I really need to make some decisions because I have a child on the way. I need to be able to take care of them. I can't be in school for the rest of my life, just, you know, hidden or missing at things. So graduated with a master's of science in environmental health sciences from the University of South Carolina, came out and was like, okay, now what? I went from a PhD to a master's, but I graduated and now I need to go find a job. So I'm originally from Greenville, South Carolina, Malden actually. So I moved back home from Columbia, South Carolina and took a job here in a food plant as a night shift environmental microbiologist and did that. Didn't really like the people that I worked for, but I loved what I did, which was basically making sure that the sanitation crew was cleaning the equipment properly at night. I would test it to make sure there wasn't bacteria growing on it, all these things. Enjoyed it. And then was like, you know what? I want to do something meaningful. Like, I like what I do, but I felt like I still wasn't hitting my purpose and my meaning, which was to help people. So I knew I still wanted to do lab and I was kind of like, what can I do to help people? So I looked in the clinical laboratory and was like, I'll go work in the hospital lab. Well, the hospital labs here require you to be ASCP certified. And I was like, what is that? So looked into it, looked into all the routes to be certified, and realized I'm going to have to go back to school because that's the fastest route. So I found an accelerated program that, you know, took my master's credits. And because I was like, I have a master's degree. Come on. Like, don't make me take all these courses again. What are we doing? So went to what at that time was Armstrong State University. They were then taken over by Georgia Southern University, but I completed the medical laboratory sciences program through them. It was online. It was a year and a half. I did my clinical portions at my local hospital, so I didn't have to go to Georgia or anything. And it was great. And that's how I ended up in as a medical laboratory scientist. And that was my first experience with ASCP and learning anything about it because I had to be ASCP certified.
You know, I love that story. And the story folds into a resounding theme that I've had on so many podcast episodes, which is my theory that, and I don't know the percentage, but one day I'm going to do a survey. I'm going to get some data behind this. But I have only met one person, and I've got a pretty big network, who went into this profession like straight on, went to school and said, I'm going to school to be a medical laboratory scientist, and enrolled in that program and went straight through. I've only met one person. The rest of us happenstance, stumble upon a table at orientation when you're going through career day, you know, go into another field and divert, just like you said, your career path takes you in another direction. And that's a problem. That's part of, you know, what we always say in other areas about advocacy and making sure that we're out there as an option for people to go into.
It's a hidden profession. People don't talk about it. You don't really know a lot of people who do it. Now I know everyone that's a MLS or MLT. But back then I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
So it's not really talked about at the way that it should be, and definitely needs to be more advocacy. Like, hey, you can do this. I actually taught nursing students microbiology in a past life for a couple semesters at my technical college here. And I would mention to them, like, hey, you know, if you don't want to do nursing, but you enjoy lab, there's this profession called medical laboratory sciences. Like, you can do that. And they actually have an MLT program there. So I'm like, you know, if you ever decide this isn't for you, there's a way for you to still help people without being in people's faces, so to speak. Some people just don't really like people, but they want to help people. And this is a way to do it where you don't have that, you know, constant patient interaction if you don't want it, but you can still make a difference.
Well, you know what? You have got such a wide background. I'm talking about academia, research, meat, you know, like the food industry. So what has been your favorite part of being in the laboratory profession so far? You know, what part of being in this profession has been your favorite thus far?
I absolutely love helping people. It's the advocacy for patients. It's the teaching, because I still teach. I love to teach. And laboratory education is big for me. I will teach it to whoever will sit down and listen. Once I learn principles of things, once I learn why we're doing stuff, like, I love to just give that knowledge to others. And to me, that's my favorite part, is seeing a patient, getting that clinical picture, looking at your results and seeing how all that matches up. I don't know. Something about that is just exhilarating for me. I love it.
Well, like I said before, when I first was kind of not even introduced, but caught wind or saw you were at the ASCP conference this past year in 2022, talking about your experience in the ambulatory setting. Yes. And so I wanted to dive more into that because, you know, the organization I currently work for, we've got our main hospital laboratory for our inpatients. However, we do also work with 5 ambulatory clinics. Each clinic has a kind of a smaller stat laboratory. And those medical technologists have to have so many different characteristics than you do in the inpatient, right? You have to be able to work so independently, resolve problems. I mean, they're running their own little ambulatory clinic. And so I wanted to talk to you about your experience working in an ambulatory setting. What have you learned since working out of there? What have been some of the challenges? Just give, because, you know, it's not, I don't want to say it's atypical, but many people work in a clinical laboratory setting.
Right.
And so may not be thinking about, you know, some of the great opportunities in working in a small clinic laboratory. Our ambulatory setting, but also some of the challenges. So,
absolutely. So, I would love to pretend like I was some like career guru for myself and said this would be the move for me to go into ambulatory, but that's not really how it happened. I kind of lucked it up on it. I got burned out in the hospital lab, which you've worked in the hospital lab during COVID times. You already know what I'm talking about. Very felt like you're just overworked. Feeling like, you know, if you are a solid worker, you're kind of, I don't want to say carrying the ship, but there's a lot riding on you if you're a good worker, you know, a lot of load bearing. And I had really good coworkers. I had a good management team at my hospital. My manager specifically was a good manager. It just got to the point where with my kids, both of my kids have like an immune deficiency. So we're kind of working some of that out. So they get sick very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I have a great support system with my parents and they help me with that. But there are times when I just need to be off work, just period. I have to go to doctor's appointments or I have to do whatever. And after I had my second child, I have a 7-year-old and now almost 2-year-old. I just kind of needed something more low key. So I thought I was going somewhere more low key, which is the hilarious part about this whole story. But they started advertising, the point of care people did, for this MLS position in this OBGYN clinic. And we all know that pregnant women have like the best veins ever, because they were like, you might have to draw blood. And I used to be a phlebotomist before I became an MLS. I worked during my clinical time period. I got a job in the hospital as a phlebotomist just to kind of get my foot in the door. I recommend that to anybody. Do that, get your foot in the door. I'm glad I did, because it gave me another perspective as well. But I was like, oh, if I have to draw blood, these are easy peasy, ladies, but I'm just responsible for doing the joint commission stuff. Okay, I can learn that. I mean, I've been in a couple audits now, so I can handle that. I just do their record keeping. I might have to do some training, blah, blah, blah. I really thought I was going out to the pasture. I was taking this to the pasture job, right? You know, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, no weekends, no holidays. Absolutely. Sign me up, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. When the weather's bad outside, guess what? Clinics are closed. So, of course. But I was just kind of thinking about it. I wasn't really like, I'm going to go do this, until the point of care people knew better than me, because they cornered me in the hallway. And was like, you saw the job, right? And I'm like, yes. They're like, you're going to apply, right? And I'm like, yes, because that's the only answer to that question. Yes. So I was like, oh my God, I have a chance. Like, they're basically recruiting me right now. So applied and went to the interview and really loved the nursing managers that I met and was like, wow, I really hope I get it. It sounds really neat. I like the people. And I actually knew the phlebotomist over there. One I knew well, one I had known, you know, lab world was very small, so you know names. So I knew that they were both good. And I was like, this would be great. I'll be leading this small 2-person lab. I can handle that. All right, cool. Got into there, got the job, went over there and realized, holy cow, like, ambulatory is a whole nother animal and we have some work to do.
Right.
Like, this is lab light. I mean, this is like the wild, wild west of labs. And I'm so used to this rigid, you know, hospital A, B, C, you do this X, Y, Z, like so much different. And I'm like, how in the world am I going to get them where they should be, because they are absolutely nowhere where they should be in performing these labs. In my clinic, we're one of the largest OBGYNs in the Southeast. I didn't know that when I took the job. We are. We do a lot of point of care testing. We do more point of care testing than a lot of the urgent cares around us. We do as much as a small hospital. That's how much point of care testing we do. And nursing performs it. So I'm tasked with teaching nursing how to do point of care. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of education involved, right?
Yes. Yes. Because it's different. You know, they operate completely differently. Their education is different, but I understand it because lab is not intuitive. Mm-hmm. Anyone who says lab is intuitive is lying. It's not. Like, they don't understand why they have to label stuff 58 times.
Right.
I know who it is. I'm looking at the person. Why would I need to do that? You know, they don't understand why you have to label it before you scan it onto the instrument, that you can't, you know, scan the label in your hand. They don't get that that's, you know, removing, you're separating the patient from the specimen. You can never do that. They also don't understand that that label in your hand is basically the specimen requisition. The mm-hmm. big sheet of paper that we normally have, that's what that is. So you need that. All of that has to accompany the specimen. So you have to teach all of these things that we just know because we've been doing it since, you know, forever. And it's ingrained in us. But now you have to teach that and teach the significance of it. Why do you have to do it? Why is it such a big deal if you don't do it? What could potentially happen if you don't do it? So that was a whole nother animal for me, and really having to sit back and just watch for a while to kind of see, like, some things were absolute no, like you have to stop this immediately. And other things was like, okay, let's ease into this because this is more of a, you know, a habit, just bad habits. Other things are just bad workflows. But ambulatory is, you have to move between the two. You have to be very fluid. You have to learn when to be lab, and you have to learn when to be ambulatory, to be honest. And some things you just have to change. Yeah. It might fit a lab setting for you to do it this way, but in the ambulatory setting, that does not work. And you have to be open to the fact that it does not work and figure out what are you going to do to fix it. So I had, for example, problem with providers. We do provider perform microscopy in my clinic because they do wet preps. And I would have KOH contamination weekly. Like, I'm changing out just bottles and bottles of KOH. And that's not cheap. And I'm like, how, like, what is happening? How does this KOH keep getting contaminated? Well, it had its own dropper on it. So basically they would be dropping their slides, and some people might be touching their slide, you know, whatever. And then they just put it back into the main bottle, and now you've contaminated a whole bottle. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to figure this out? So we're not going through like 3 and 4 bottles of KOH a week. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to get rid of the dropper. They're going to have to use pipettes, like just little pipettes, plastic ones, cheap, you know, disposable pipettes. So I literally ripped the dropper that was built into the bottle, tore it off, and put a whole box of disposable pipettes in there. I have not had a contaminated bottle of KOH since.
So you've actually had to turn yourself into like a patient champion.
Yeah, it's like, it's small and it sounds so small, but it's like you have to sit there and just start at square one.
Well, I think there are so many things about what it sounds like to me is there are so many things about working in a clinical laboratory setting that as a frontline worker working on the bench, we take for granted some of the steps we take to ensure quality. And we just take that as this is part of the process. I'm labeling this way. I'm aliquoting this way. I'm, you know, putting expiration dates here. I'm doing this documentation. And you kind of forget the why because it just becomes like a monotonous process, like a checklist. Yes, but then when you get into your setting, it becomes more of these are teachable moments of why I'm doing this to teach you almost about quality and to ensure that you understand the why behind why we do these things so you can make sure you get reliable tests for your patients that you're going to treat off of. You're going to treat the patient off of these results.
Absolutely. And that's the whole message. I encourage people, if you are in ambulatory and you're kind of in the situation where you have people blowing you off or you can't figure out how to teach them lab, the best thing that you can do sometimes is present them with the numbers. Okay. Everybody understands numbers. So for me, event report situations, like if I have to start putting in a whole lot of event reports on something, I start tracking it. So I will track whatever that is and kind of show them, hey, I've had to put in 12 event reports simply because they can't seem to figure out, you know, this one step here. Like, I can show you this on paper, what they're doing versus what they should be doing and why that's a patient safety issue. Because everything boils down to patient safety issues when you're in the hospital. And if you really want to make an impact, you have to show how it's endangering a patient or how it's just kind of endangering your reputation as a clinic. Yeah. That we can't operate this way.
What is
it? You start tracking those things.
What is it meant for you to add that level of advocacy for the patient? Because it sounds, at the end of the day, you're advocating for quality of the sample, for quality of the patient, right?
Absolutely.
So that patient doesn't have to come back and get recollected. So that patient can get treated as quickly as possible with the best results. So what is it meant for you to really be the person in your setting, doing that level of advocating for laboratory results on behalf of the patients?
It honestly makes me feel like job well done at the end of the day. That's why I did this. I think that's why all of us get into healthcare in one way, shape, or form, is to help someone. And if you're in healthcare for the money, or if you're in healthcare for the accolades or to get some position of power, you probably won't be in it very long. Because at the end of the day, it's about helping people. And you really have to be passionate about that and really have that in your heart somewhere. So when you come to people and you're speaking to your medical directors, you're speaking to your clinic managers, your nursing managers, they got into it too because they wanted to help people. That's what it's about. So if you sit down and have a conversation about how you're not helping people by doing something this way and can show that you're going to cause harm, most of them, they're, you know, the red flags come up, the alerts come out. Like, they're like, oh my God, what do we need to do to change it? But it also got you get respect too, because I've noticed in my clinic, I feel they do have a level of respect for me because I do stand up for patients. I do stand up for what I feel is the right thing. And I speak on it, you know, right or wrong. I'm willing to talk about it and have those conversations. And they see that I'm working hard for the patient. They understand why I'm doing it. It's not for Shonda. It's not for Shonda's ego. It's not just because, you know, my job says you have to. It's because we're trying to protect our patients at the end of the day. And I go hard, whether it's a mistake on our behalf, if it's LabCorp or whatever, I'll get on the phone with whoever if in the name of a patient. Like, I have no qualms about that.
Well, let me tell you, it came across when I met you. I was like, yeah, Shonda is in love with her patients. She is passionate about what she's doing. I do want to switch gears, though, because you talked about in the beginning of this episode some of your own mental health struggles and how you kind of combated that and came over that. It came on the other side of that. And so when we talk about advocacy, there are different levels. You could advocate for a system. I mean, you know, many of us in professional organizations, we're advocating for professional organizations to engage members and network and assist us with getting raises and better working conditions for medical laboratory scientists. We can advocate on behalf of our patients or individuals, but we could also be advocates for ourselves. Right. And so I want to ask you, kind of switching gears, you're such a passionate advocate for the patient. How would you suggest to anybody who's listening today to also be an advocate for themselves? Like I said, you know, working through this pandemic and then also so well documented the level of burnout and mental health struggles that happen, not just in the laboratory, but just in healthcare as a in general. What advice would you go back and give to your younger self about taking care of yourself, about wellness, about, you know, being an advocate for your own position in this field?
I think you have to stop caring about what other people think. That's number one. I made a lot of decisions in my life based on, you know, how I would be perceived by others. I went to the University of North Carolina because it was a great school. I didn't want to go there. Honestly, I didn't. I wanted to go to North Carolina State. But people were like, you got accepted into Chapel Hill. You don't turn down Chapel Hill. Like, that's crazy. You go to Chapel Hill.
Yeah, you so go to Chapel Hill.
Yeah, like that. No, I mean, that's what you do. So I did it. And I think I spent a lot of my life, you know, having that pressure of other people, you know, weigh on me and my decisions. And you have to free yourself from that. You know, you really do. You have to sit down and say, what is it that I want for me and for my life? Because a lot of that depression came from me feeling like I couldn't meet, you know, someone else's expectation, that I was failing in some way, shape, or form. And in some of those situations, I was failing, but that's okay too. You know, we always teach people how to succeed, but we never teach people how to fail.
Right.
And you have to teach both. And sometimes you have to know when to abandon the ship. Mm-hmm. It's okay to not go down with the ship. You need to get off of it sometimes and swim to another one, or get on the raft, or be like, you know, Jack on the Titan, holding your arm up to Rose or whatever. Sometimes you need to just say, this is not for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you failed anything. It's just maybe not for you. That may not be your path. That may not be your direction. That may not be your purpose. And sometimes that gets all cloudy and muddy and you don't know how to work yourself out of that, but you have to let others in. Number two is forget that job. let's keep it real. You know, if you die tomorrow, what are they going to do? Send you a card and a flower?
Yeah.
I mean, you have got to take care of yourself. There's another job out there. You know, sometimes we need to start looking for things that work with our lifestyles instead of trying to cram our lifestyles into this rigid, you know, job that we can't maintain. You know, it might be moving into the ambulatory where you have a little bit more flexibility. However, that's a whole nother animal.
Yeah.
You know, you get the nice schedule you want, but I promise you, like, you're in the Wild Wild West now. But if your personality is set up to handle that, you're going to be just fine. But start looking for other opportunities and, you know, reaching out to other people and saying, hey, this is what I want to do. How can I still do it? Mm-hmm. And it may look different. And you have to be open to that it just may look different, but it's not any different. The main goal of helping your patients, doing laboratory testing, all of that is the same. It's just not you sitting at an instrument in a hospital on a 12-hour shift or 8-hour shift or, you know, whatever, doing your weekend rotation and coming in when it snows. It's just different.
And your career journey hasn't been a straight line. I don't think anybody's is. You know, you've been met with, like you said, some what you thought were failures, but they all led you to where you are now. So what would you say to a person who's listening right now who might be discouraged by some type of what they feel like is adversity or uncertainty about a challenging time in their career or in healthcare?
I think you have to, again, sit down and figure out, what are you doing? What is your mission? What is your goal? And figure out if where you're at now, is that really where you're supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
And some things we have to understand are for a season and for a reason. So maybe this is your stepping block. Maybe that adversity is in place for a reason, so that when you get to the next level, you can reflect back. And, you know, when you encounter that again, it's no longer going to be a stumbling block to you. I truly believe that sometimes we keep coming around to the same thing or having these what we call troubles in our lives. But really, it's just a lesson. You haven't learned the lesson yet. For me, I was hot-headed. I was a hot-headed person. I would blow up, or, you know, if I felt I was being disrespected, you know, I was going to set people straight. But as I've gone along in my life and in my career, that has toned down tremendously. You know, do I still get angry? Yes. But am I trying to chew somebody's head off or getting up? No, I'm not doing that. And that's prepared me to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in a leadership role, and you can't do all of that.
Right.
You know, you have to kind of keep your emotions somewhat contained. And
you want to be effective.
You know? Exactly. And people are not listening to the person who's ranting and raving. They're just not. Now, I do rant and rave, but only when it's called for. Like, it's got to be egregious for me to rant and rave. But you learn a lot about yourself, and a lot of the troubles you go through are just look at it as character development.
Exactly.
It's going to take you to where you need to be if you let it. You know,
so when you talk about, think about what you're doing and now being in a leadership role, I want to ask you, what's next for you? What is next for you professionally? Where do you see yourself going? Where do you see yourself going?
I would like to be a manager. And, you know, before I always said I was going to be the director of a lab and a manager of a lab. But to be honest, now I'm thinking I might want to be a clinic manager. But ooh. I feel like I'm destined for a larger platform, bigger platform. And I feel like my management team at the clinic has actually given me a lot of opportunities to kind of showcase my talents, my skills. They've kind of pushed me to the forefront and let me do my thing. Uh-huh. And I feel like they're supporting me in the fact that, you know, I'm destined for something greater. And when you have people behind you that are kind of, they see it in you and they kind of push you to the front, you have to answer that call. You know, I feel like I can't let them down in a way, because it's like I feel like they see me for who I am, mm-hmm. not what I think I'm supposed to be or what I think should be given to me or whatever. I feel like they really see Shonda, and they've allowed me to kind of, you know, spread all of Shonda's goodness through the clinic. And it's really empowered me. It's empowered me.
Well, I think empowered is the right word. And for anybody listening that has, who feels like, oh, I have a strong personality and, you know, maybe I'm working the bench and I feel suppressed, or I feel like my ideas aren't being heard. I like doing episodes like this because there is a way for you to bring your entire self to work as a clinical laboratory scientist. There's a way for you to allow your personality and your characteristics and all the things that make you you to shine through and still be an effective laboratorian. And perhaps the ambulatory setting is that area for you, like Shonda.
I would say give it a go. If you're really struggling in main lab, find you a clinic and go to it.
Yeah.
Especially if you enjoy teaching, if you enjoy advocacy for lab, advocacy for patients, it's the perfect place for you to do it.
And so, Shonda, if there is a listener who says, you know what, I might just want to go that route, but I want to follow up with Shonda and ask her some more questions, why don't you tell the listeners how they could reach out to you and connect to you after this episode?
The best way to get in touch with me is through email. So you can just use my regular Gmail. It's SeanJones34, so SeanJones34@gmail.com. And that's probably the best way for you to reach me. And I would love to talk to anybody who's kind of, if you're struggling, if you're thinking about ambulatory, if you're just like, hey, you know, tell me more about your story. I'm open to all of it.
Well, Shonda, thank you so much for being a guest on the Elaborate Topic show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I feel honored.
No problem. We love having people on the front lines on this show to tell their stories and just give another perspective. It's so important that we continue to connect and network and reach out to each other to help each other along in our individual journeys. So if you like what you heard today and you want to listen to any of our previous shows, make sure you subscribe to our podcast at directimpactbroadcasting.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Remember to reach out to us if you want to be a guest on the show and you feel like you have a topic that you want to share. We'd love to showcase you on a future episode. You can follow me at Stephanie Y. Whitehead on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, or any of my other social medias. And until next week, when we have another amazing episode of the Elaborate Topics podcast, all of you guys have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.